Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. We had 8 games last night in the association. Some interesting things I was sort of picking up as I was, you know, toggling around between League Pass and then the games that were on national TV. And it kind of struck me, David, 3 teams kind of caught my eye. The Celtics, the Warriors, and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Boston game, you know, there really isn't much to say about that beyond the fact that they blew out the Nets and really kind of jumped on them to start the game. It was like 30-6 or 7 at one point. I mean, once that happens, and it's like Thorpe's rule, still like undefeated. Win a quarter by 10 or more, don't lose a quarter by 10 or more. Well, they won a quarter by 30, and that was it, yeah. Right? Like
90+ game percent over. Chance of winning at that point. Yeah,
already, right. Game was over then. But what I took away was Boston's mindset, and I'll get back to that in a minute. Golden State had a lead late against the Minnesota Timberwolves, ended up losing in overtime. The Memphis Grizzlies also had a lead late against the Portland Trailblazers, ended up losing that game in regulation, really crumbled down the stretch. And it sort of struck this to me, David. We here at True Hoop, we of course are advocates for a shorter season, right? We think this is too many games and guys play too much. But 82 is what we have, and it is what it is. And teams that know how to navigate themselves through 82 tend to often do well, right? They'll have good record, and teams with great records tend to perform well in the postseason, right? It's usually what history has told us. And I thought it was striking that Boston, in a game against Brooklyn, you know, they just kind of came out with a focus and an intensity, win that quarter by 30, and they just, like, we're not fooling around. And Kyrie Irving said after the game, and I thought this was interesting, he was asked about Boston, and he said, it's clear they want to win the championship, and they're not wasting any time in the regular season. We're just one of those teams in the way, and we just can't be one of those teams in the way. We've got to be one of those teams that stands up to them. And I thought the interesting part there was, it's clear they want to win a championship, and they're not wasting time. And to me, that's what I've seen from Boston all year. They haven't been perfect. They're not undefeated. They've had a couple hiccups, right? Lost a couple games in Orlando they shouldn't have, but those things happen over 82 games. But for the most part, and given what they went through in the preseason, losing their head coach, I was like, you know, I wonder how this team's going to come out. David, they've come out like, no, we are getting back to the NBA Finals because we should have won it. And you see that from them. And that collective hurt from losing that 2-1 lead last year clearly has fueled them to drive forward. Golden State, conversely, have been up and down all year. They're about a 500 team. I think they're one game above 500 right now. We know about their two parallel timelines that doesn't seem to be working out so well. But it's also something you talk about and what we know, which is human nature is to get complacent when you've been up, when you've been at the top and when you're successful. They've been to the finals 8 years, won 4 titles. They're also older, they're key guys. It's hard every day to get up and play at that elite level. It's just, that's just the reality of life, right? And you're seeing that with them in games where you really shouldn't lose this lead, right? That happened to Brooklyn, it happened to them against Minnesota. Like, they just inexplicably down the stretch just lose their minds and are not playing with the focus they should. And conversely, Memphis, a third team who everyone's talking about as a contender. We know we're big fans of the Grizzlies here. I think their ascent last year to that second best record in the league, kind of a not fool's gold because they earned it. Right. But they maybe think, oh, we're really good and we're gonna be fine. This is easy. And you and I know, as you like to say, this game is fucking hard. It is not easy. And you've got to be willing to do all the things. And I just thought those three teams, what a different approach to attacking the regular season, right? A nondescript Wednesday in February.
Oh boy, there's a lot to unpack here. So I think I've said this on our show once before, told this story, but I know we have lots of new listeners, which I'm very happy to hear that. So I'm going to say it again. There's a famous story in one of Harvey Penick's golf books, which were really the driving force behind my Basketball is Jazz book in 2017, where he tells a story of playing with some world-class players. I don't remember who they were anymore, but very famous players. And they're playing on a mountain, like a beautiful mountain course. And they cannot make a putt. Like these incredible players and Coach Penick, who was this amazing player when he was young, can't make a putt. And they're reading the greens, they're reading the sun, and where's the water drain off to? Because there's all these cues for reading a green or whatever was greens were back then, because a lot of them were sand greens, and they can't make a putt. And they're just confounded. And so as they're driving down the mountain and out, they look up and they see their problem, which was they looked at where the sun was setting, which does affect how grass grows late, and where water might run up, blah, blah, blah. But they forgot to decide, think about gravity, because the course was played on the side of a mountain. Everything was running off the mountain. That you might have seen a contour that made you think it was going left, but the whole contour was tilted, you know, the mm-hmm. other way because of the mountain. Mm-hmm. I think about that all the time as we think about sports, and not as a coach so much as an analyst, is we have to be careful to not forget the biggest narrative in the room, and which is gravity on the golf mm-hmm. course. In this case, it's what you're talking about. And then not get too caught up in the particulars of any one game, thinking that it definitely has to do with that narrative. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in any game, if you see how the game plays out and immediately replay the game, you plugged a button into this computer and every player was recharged to be just like he was before, there's zero chance the game's going to be the same. Mm-hmm. Right, you talked. What was the net score against the Celtics?
At one point, it was like 36. Like,
there is, if you're a Marvel fan, there's a parallel universe somewhere.
Yes,
where the Nets were up 30-6. Why?
Correct.
Because shooting counts. Mm-hmm. The Celtics were hot. Mm-hmm. The Nets were not. And the Celtics were better to begin with because KD mm-hmm. didn't play and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I never get worried about any one game because those things matter, right? However, I think your point is really, really good, because I think that big picture gravity of Boston being driven with that pain, they weren't just up 2-1. Game 4 was at home. Mm-hmm. People like me were saying they are the better team. Mm-hmm. And they, in my opinion, they were. Tatum ran out of gas. Mm-hmm. Curry didn't.
Got hot. Mm-hmm.
And they won game 4 and the rest of, he had 40, whatever, in game 4 mm-hmm. and the rest is history. So I think that there's such a great reference point there. I always tell my young players, especially, don't just blow off what happened last night. I make notes of it in my phone. I have like a running commentary for my players for their summer work that I won't be doing, but other people will, and I kind of coach them up on it. That what happened last night, remember that. And so for example, there might be a team, let's say Memphis Grizzlies, who have a player, mm-hmm. let's call him Jaren Jackson Jr., that mm-hmm. likes to switch on the guards. Well, as a guard, guess what? You're fucked. Mm-hmm. You cannot really count on scoring on him but 2 times in 10. You better have a plan so that it's not 0 times in 10. And then you also have to get smarter about not calling him into the screen. Have another guy come. As I said to a player recently, the line doesn't pick on the biggest wildebeest. He picks the three-legged one. Okay? Yep. Well, there are some guys on Memphis, including John Morant, that mm-hmm. much better to target than Jaren Jackson Jr. But you got to be prepared in case he is playing. How are you going to attack him? Remember that that's a reference for your work in the summer, right? Mm-hmm. Hard to really do that much. There's a lot of things you do in season that isn't one of those things. So I think you're totally right on Boston. I think when I watched the fourth quarter of Golden State, Minnesota, mm-hmm. the entire fourth quarter, not the overtime. And listen, we know they're prone to turnovers. I'm telling you, one of their turnovers was Steph Curry threw the ball to nobody. Yes. There were two guys there. Their names were Kevon Looney and Andrew Wiggins. This wasn't an uncomfortable new teammate deal. He's won three titles with Looney, and he won one with Wiggins last year.
Right.
And neither of them were looking, and he threw it right out of bounds. I don't know why. Boston tends to make a lot less of those mistakes. So when you're angry, very often you'll be more narrow of focus. Mm-hmm. And I think Boston plays with that edge more so than Golden State does. Golden State is famous for overwhelming you with an avalanche of threes and stops. Mm-hmm. They're not getting either. To your point, they are older. There's a famous story you may know, Gerard. Forgive me for this rant, but I have a lot going on in my head here.
Go.
Corey Brewer, Mike D'Antoni tells a great story where in Houston, he was coaching Corey, and Mike told me this, but Corey also told me this, but Mike told the press this. It's one of the best stories over here. Corey made some kind of whirling dervish move as he's capable of doing. This was later in his career. He still can do 360 dunks. He got to the rim and he just missed the shot. And then he was tired. And then he got taken out of the game. And he said to Coach D'Antoni, "Sorry, coach, I just ran out of talent." It's like one of the greatest lines ever, right? Well, I watched Clay. I watched Draymond. And I thought Corey Brewer. Like, both those guys flubbed layups. They just ran out of talent. It's age a little bit. Their mind is thinking the same. If they're probably smarter than they ever have been. But that lift they used to get, which, remember, the ball is traveling at the same speed as the body. It's part of that vehicle, in a sense. If you're in an airplane, you jump out of the airplane, the millisecond you leave the craft, you're traveling at the speed of the plane. That's a law of physics, right? Well, that ball is traveling with that same burst when you jump. But if that burst isn't what it used to be, but in your mind you think it is, you're going to leave the ball short
right.
when you go to shoot it. This is all something we have to coach up as players age. You have to be more cognizant of shooting stronger because your leg power isn't quite that same acceleration it was. So I do think that's an issue with Golden State. There is an alarming lack of alarming worry.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like we're the Warriors, and they're not. It's not just the older guys. They have some bad rotation players. They are in need of a trade, which might be something I write about this weekend. I think I am. We've already been started. It looks like I'm going to do it. So that is something that in any one game, they could be better. Mm-hmm. But that is a driving force as to where is my sense of urgency on every possession, not just one or the other, not just when the starter's in, whatever. You have to have that. And what was the other? The Memphis game.
And the Memphis. Mm-hmm.
The Memphis game, I thought, was as much to do with Naz Reid and Jangelo Russell killing it.
Oh, no. That was Golden State. Memphis played Portland. So that was Dame.
Right. I saw that one too. You're right. That Minnesota also was very good. So yes, it's right. They won it overtime.
D'Angelo was outstanding.
Unbelievable. But so was Naz Reid. Naz Reid, the Warriors announcer, was saying, "All right, one-on-one with Draymond. Oh, he scored." Like, Naz is pretty good.
Yeah, he sure did.
He's a nice backup. And Kat and Gobert didn't play in that game.
Naz Reid, someone who has been talked about in trade rumors, by the way.
I did not include him, I don't believe, in my trade piece that came out today, my second one, because I don't think Minnesota should trade him.
They should not.
Yeah, we'll get to another Minnesota trade later that I think you'll find delightful. So the Portland game, Anthony Simons happened.
Yes.
And Damon Lillard happened. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you who else happened. The secret champion of that game was Gary Payton III. He made some really, really good defensive plays late. And Minnesota was just okay. They weren't terrible. Jerry Jackson was good in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Ja missed some tough shots. There's parity. Like, these are, this is, all of this is defined. Well, not the Boston game. These are very even teams. And so if you don't have quite that edge, you're at a disadvantage if they do, especially on a road game.
Yeah, and I thought Memphis in that fourth quarter especially, and this is what worries me about them in the playoffs, got a bit stagnant offensively. And it's like, Ja, bail us out. And it's like, he's really awesome and can do that a lot of times. But if I know that's coming, I'm going to have a pretty good defense to stop that, particularly come the postseason, right? It's like, no, that's not going to work. And I just thought that, because Jaren, as you mentioned, was good, right? I thought they could run a couple things for him to get him some pops for three. They could have done a couple different things. I just didn't see it. Again, to your point, not to overreact about one game, but the larger thing is, right, we want to move beyond where we were last year, right? We thought we were a team that could have made it to the conference finals. Well, over your last 10, you're not playing like a team.
Four and six. Looks like,
correct, that should be going to a conference final. Yeah. So reference points for them.
There was a play in that game, though. I'm going to bang on this drum forever, and I'm happy to always be proven wrong. But Jaren Jackson had the ball in the right corner, and he tries to get a shot off, and they defend it pretty well. And he starts driving towards the first box, second box, you know, going left-handed now because he's in the right corner. And he kind of takes some strides and boom, dunks the ball. And I thought, that motherfucker looked like Giannis right there. Like, what the? He's so long. His game is coming. His offensive game is coming. He may be Tim Duncan 2.0. He's going to be, and still not be the best prospect in the class because Luka's so great.
Right.
So I'll only be half wrong. I didn't see Luka being this amazing, but this job, Jaren Jackson, wow.
Yeah.
And Stephen Adams is out for them, and that matters right now.
And that's a huge piece for them because they're not rebounding at the same rate. And now it's Jaren's still an excellent defender, but he has more different defensive responsibilities now that Stephen's not there, right? And so it's changing things a bit for them. Again, they're still number two in the West, all that, nothing to worry about, but that story you mentioned about Harvey Bank, the larger, right? You're playing golf on a mountain. You're trying to get to
the biggest acting force on you is motivation, inspiration, work each day. That what happens in the game, but people always say this, you want to win every day so that when you get to the game, you've already won. Well, the other team's trying to do the same thing. Especially that's the difference in high school and the NBA more than anything else. Is in high school, that really will win you. There is a reason why the same coaches always win 70%+ of their games. They're crushing you in every other day of the year. Mm-hmm. When they have a couple extra talented guys, they win state championships, but they're always going to be, you know, understand their system, quality people, quality student athletes, blah, blah, blah. The NBA, even with bad coaches, the talent's still really there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be driven. It's hard. And this is why we talk about 82 games, mm-hmm. probably robbing us of some of that. The games would just, they'll be more energized more often, not just physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Think about it, David. And we've labored this point before, so I won't stay long on it. Imagine if these guys only had to play twice within 7 days.
Yeah, they'd like be fresher all the time.
Oh, my God. It'd be so crazy.
And let me just say this, Gerard. So you're going to hear people in the Twitterverse or whatever say something like or write something like, well, if they only play two games a week, they'll still be load managed. They'll still want their rest. Almost all of them are racist. That's a comment on our mostly black athletes. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking crime that they would even say that. It's so ridiculous. These players want to play.
Of course they do.
They're being told, no, we need you not to play so that we can have you next week. LeBron and AD sat out in Brooklyn so they could play healthy against Madison Square Garden and win. And they did.
Correct.
And they played well and they won. We shouldn't have to have that.
Right.
And by the way, you could have some back-to-backs, which like baseball does. I realize it's a different sport. But it'd be kind of cool to play Brooklyn and then the Knicks back-to-back sometime. Just don't have them play any games the rest of the week.
Right, right, right.
These guys are used to doing that. Remember, they grew up playing two and three games in a day. And college tournaments, they have it. They've been doing it forever as NBA players, but the college guys coming in, they do this in holiday tournaments, preseason tournaments, and postseason tournaments. So they're used to it. Just don't make them play all week long. That might be a fun thing here and there you could mix in. A couple times a year.
Do the Brooklyn New York double. That might be interesting. No, that anyway, I knew you'd have some interesting insight on that, on those three teams. And I just thought, there's something to watch going forward. So we talked about the trade deadline. David wrote two pieces this week, one for each conference, players that he sees in play from each team. And unlike most of you guys out there, it's not the names you all think, right? It's because everyone is thinking a couple different things, right? We're kind of good. Maybe we can be good. And it's like everyone needs the same kind of player. Oh, I need shooting size. And so does everybody else, right? And there's only so many of those shooting size defense guys that exist, right? All in one package. Probably it's like two of them, right? So everyone is trying to get the same guy. Or, does it make sense to alter our future for my timeline? And this is why GMs and these, they get paid a lot of money to make these decisions, right? You have to figure out what is best for your team, both now, and we don't want to kill our long term. And I thought it was really great because you had so many interesting things. I want to stay with the West because we talked about Golden State and we started with them at the show and we talked about those three teams. The two timeline thing has proven thus far to be challenging, right? The young guys just, first of all, James Wiseman's a center. We know centers take a long time to develop.
And he's been injured a lot and missed a whole year.
And he's been injured. I mean, you put in your piece so effectively. If you were Memphis 2 years ago or you were the average fan 2 years ago and you saw Jaren Jackson Jr., you'd probably say, that guy's not worth the fourth pick. Get rid of him. Well, what are you saying now?
Yeah.
Oh, defensive player of the year.
Yeah. And maybe better, make like first team All-NBA coming.
Correct.
Like Embiid and Jokic have to age out. Here comes Jaren Jackson Jr. at the four or the five.
Correct. Now, Memphis had that luxury to wait because they didn't have no Steph Curry or no Thomas to win now. So who cares? We can develop. Well, Golden State doesn't have that.
Right.
So the question is, what do they do with Kuminga, Moody, and Wiseman? And the tough part is Kuminga, right, David? Because he's the one in their rotation actually playing positive minutes, which means he's the one that other teams want because they're like, ooh, he's really good.
And he has a role. They're having him, besides being a big athletic forward, he's guarding guards. They need that. They don't really have anyone who does that. So I've already started playing with the trade machine into what they could do, which I'm going to get into my article. If you're going to include Kuminga, then you have to find someone that can guard the people he's guarding. But let me first address this. Every year I say the same thing. Almost always, the crap you read about who's looking at who, it's all made up.
Right.
Okay? It's made up by agents mostly. In fact, as someone who sits on both sides of this fence, because I deal with agents all the time, as you know, agents are planting most stories. The better journalists don't just write them as puff pieces. The ones less interested in being fair-minded are doing it. I'm fine with that. Anything to sell our game, I'm all for. But teams almost always are never releasing what they're planning on doing for lots of reasons we could talk about if you want. And I only know this because of my intimate involvement with both players and agents, and because I, as an analyst for so long, I will get phone calls. An agent might have called me. Well, 2 months ago, an agent called me. Hey, where are some other? I don't like where my player is. He's playing really well, but I think you play better somewhere else. Can you give me some ideas? And so I get those kinds of calls a lot, mm-hmm. or texts mm-hmm. a lot. But when it's been a player that I'm intimately involved with or just know very well, and I know that the team is looking to trade him, the word from the team is always, well, first of all, it's rare to hear from the team. But I have a lot of people that I've helped in the NBA.
Correct.
And they would only tell me knowing never once would I have anything written about mm-hmm. because they need dead silence. There are times where GMs will say to the other GM, if we get one word of this breathed into a report, it
trades
over.
Off.
Yeah, we mm-hmm. can't do it. And for all sorts of different reasons. Remember, we talk about gravity, right? We talk about the most physical impact. Okay, who do all these GMs work for? Oligarch billionaires, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think they're easily assuaged, you're out of your mind, right? You have to control that narrative. More than anything, that's why. It's because not only do I have to deal with my owner and making sure he likes what's happened, but I've got to make sure my trading partner has the same thing he can say to his guy. We can't have
right
this shit happening early because the owner, hey, was this true? What's going on? No, it's not true. It's not true. And then if it turns out to be true, the owner's like, you lied to me.
Yeah, right.
You can't do that. You can't lie to the owner. So anything they read, that guy's got to say they're just agents planting stories. Now, when a player like OG Anunoby was seen telling Tyrese Halliburton, like whispering, I think something like, get me out of here or get me to you, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, that shit's out of the bag now.
Right, right.
That is actionable information, which is why I ranked him so high on my two-way players. For the East, I do think that there's a chance he gets traded. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned OG because I wanted to go there because, as you said, he's a name that we've heard about constantly. But to your point, yes, agent may plan it. You don't want that to get out. But right. OG's already made that clear. So now we know.
Right.
And I don't know if this part's true, but the Masai asking price for OG is probably going to be pretty steep. I saw somewhere someone said the Knicks were willing to offer 3 first-round picks. I mean, that seems
but who is saying high. That? You think, well, right, you think right. someone from the Knicks is telling people that? Right. I don't believe that.
I don't believe that.
I'm not saying that 3 isn't the right number. I'm saying it's not a team person saying it.
Yeah, because why would a team like, yeah, sure, we'll give up 3 picks.
Teams, if you're doing that as an executive, you're not in the league long.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. That's just, there's things that you have to keep in-house for lots of different reasons. So, what I tried to do, I normally ignore all this. Like, I listen to a few people on podcasts religiously, not when it comes to the trade talk. Mm-hmm. I don't think they know what they're talking about. I do think they're talking to knowledgeable people, but not with this kind of stuff. You're being played. It's like the spin room after a debate. I'd rather just hear the analysis afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do with my list is simply what made sense on paper to me that you might be, remember, are you trying to get younger? Are you trying to get better? Mm-hmm. And so who might be actionable for those kinds of trades? That's what I tried to do. Yeah.
No, without question. And so, OG, you had him listed as your top two-way guy.
For the East,
For the East, for sure. You have DeAndre Ayton and Chris Paul on the list. And Phoenix is a team we talked about a lot this year because I was like, man, I just don't like what's happening over there. And I don't know what Phoenix is going to do. I mean, which I guess is a good thing for them. They're in the play-in range, I believe, last time I checked. Book is supposed to come back possibly next week against Brooklyn on Tuesday. So that could be a welcome sign for them, and they can potentially get on a run here second half of the year because this is still the bones of a team that won 64, whatever they won last year.
And Cam Johnson's playing great, and Bridges is very good. Yeah, Booker's still young.
So maybe they try to, you know, just run it back.
And they're going to trade Jay Crowder for sure and get something. He'll be traded.
I just wonder, like, has, you know, we talked about how Boston suffered that hurt and that heartache and that galvanized. Has there been enough time to galvanize that fissure between Ayton and Monty and all the different things? And can they all coalesce for, you know, one last run? I don't know.
Yeah, my thought on Ayton was before the season, I thought, okay, it's over. Who cares that he had a contract conflict? That isn't weird. That's normal. Mm-hmm. Teams are not typically just saying, here's the max. They don't want it. In fact, I had an agent tell me the other day that he thinks the executive in question for his player, who's a max player, isn't rooting for his player to be a max player again the next time his contract is up. They want to save money. And that's weird. Why would you root against your own player? That's why, to save money. Who knows what the owner is saying, whatever. There's a lot of nuance here, right? So to me, Ayton should not have been – there's no acrimony left. You got paid your full boat. What do you – now just go win games. Let's get back to the finals and see if we can't win it this time. Something's going on. I don't know. Something's going on. He's actually playing pretty well. Not to the level of that contract, but he's still young and he's a big man. I think he has time to develop. Chris Paul is not the point god. He's point very good. He's point very good.
Right.
And so maybe Phoenix feels like if we wait another year and we get even less for him, let's maybe the Clippers can give us Norman Powell and some picks or whatever. And they might feel like we're not going to win it all this year, but let's really aim for 23-24. So I felt like Chris Paul and Ayton both are movable. And it's just going to be hard to really it's going to be harder to make the top four than it is to probably get to the finals. Because to get to the finals, you have to outplay one opponent.
Right.
Now you got to play a bunch to move up. They're all so bunched together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that note, and in also the other in the West that I thought was interesting, you didn't have him on your trade column, and probably because you're like, Minnesota shouldn't, because he's very good. Jaden McDaniels.
No way.
And then on Utah, Jared Vanderbilt's a name that we're hearing a lot about. And Utah's an interesting team, David, because I think they're going to start tanking. I'm not 100% sure. I think they will.
One last night against Toronto.
I know. So here's the thing. If Conley and Clarkson are still on this team after the trade deadline, then they're trying to go to the play-in and do whatever. So I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. But that was a team that's interesting because they had guys that I think people could potentially want to get, right? Conley could help a team that needs a backup point, right? Steady hand there. Clarkson, a microwave scorer off the bench, and Vanderbilt's kind of this rangy, do-it-all, 6'9"-ish kind of guy. If Danny's going to make any moves, as we know from his past experience, it's going to be in a move that is, at least advantageous for him, right? He's not going to do it just because. So it'll be interesting.
No, his reputation is pretty strong with those kind of things. A lot of the league, people will say that he's going to win every deal. I don't know if that's true, but that's what his reputation is. Mm-hmm. Utah is in a different position than Minnesota. I think we're going to get into my trade idea for you in a second. I think Minnesota made this move with Gobert for a reason, and they're playing better.
Anthony Edwards is playing better. That's the big key.
That was the whole crutch of the trade to me was Anthony Edwards. I'll explain Minnesota's situation this way. Anthony Edwards needed to be a two-way star because now here's what happens. D'Lo is an offensive juggernaut. Mm-hmm. He is. D'Angelo Russell is a great offensive player. So is Kat. So when Edwards is in the game, you've got three elite offensive players. Okay. If Anthony Edwards is the two-way star, because he should be a stud on defense, which he was last year, you've got him. Jaden McDaniels is an amazing defensive player. Mm-hmm. And the last 5 years, Rudy Gobert has been the best defensive player in the world. So now you have three elite defensive players. So it seems like you have six guys. Three great offense, three great defense. Edwards is the swing guy. Mm-hmm. Right? So if he can do that, that says a lot. Naz Reid is legit.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of his. I was when he first, I couldn't believe, I don't think he got drafted, maybe second round. I thought that was a big mistake. I thought it was very good. But here's a question for you. Would you agree that Kat's never going to be a defensive player? Because he hasn't been pretty much ever.
I think that's about right. Given, you know, where he is now, that's about right.
Okay. So in order to help him, The mistake they made, I think, is they took a 7-footer rim protector in Gobert. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the best guy to pair him with. I think the best way to pair him is with a big forward that can play the perimeter on defense and rim protect, as opposed to only rim protect. Let him guard fives and let there be a big stud wing or forward defender. So who do you know that wants to win a championship the next 5 years has such a player at the four?
Are you saying the Memphis Grizzlies should think about getting Karl Anthony Towns?
I am. That's exactly what I'm saying. It would be weird because they traded for Rudy to play with Cat, but I don't think that pairing will ever work the way they want it to work. And I could be wrong. He's out right now. It doesn't matter. He'll play 21 games this year. And I don't know they'll want to trade with Memphis because they're the same conference and everything. But Cat next to Jaren Jackson is a dream pairing, I think, for both players. Because Jaren can shoot the three and play in the paint. So can Cat. They complement each other very well both ways. And Jaren really helps mask Cat's inefficiencies on defense, his weaknesses on defense.
You can really go five out with that lineup, right?
You can do lot of things because they're such versatile offensive players. And that's what I think. Memphis, and there's a way to do it. Ain't easy because it's a lot of money. There's a way to do it. I did it on the trade machine today.
Because the cat deals a lot of money. So the question there, and if you're Minnesota, you're like, listen, your little young guys are good, but you better be giving me something back in return. And I don't know that I want to give up Bane.
and Bane, they have Edwards. So unless they have
Edwards, right?
But you maybe you do give up Bane because you're getting the best offensive big in terms of shooting, not overall offense, but pure shooting probably.
Right.
He wasn't doing great this year, but it was only 21 games, and it was a weird fit with Rudy. And maybe they'd learn to play together. Adams doesn't help Minnesota, but he'd be part of a three-team deal. There's a lot. I've given a lot of thought to it.
You give picks too because Minnesota needs picks to recoup since they gave them all away. Picks.
You get Tyus Jones, who would be a very nice player for them as a backup one. You'd have to get Tyus, but you're getting Cat.
That's true.
Getting Cat. You can't get Cat for nothing, and you're not going to sign him in free agency.
David, you've got five years left. You know I want to get the best players and give up nothing. That's how I want to operate. Right.
So nothing's going to happen this year, but I just was thinking if you're Memphis, you got to find you could find a real offensive force to play next to Jaren.
Because if
it's a bad defensive player, it's okay because you have Jaren. Mm-hmm. He makes up for it. And it's different than Rudy because Rudy only protects that rim, whereas Jaren can guard the whole court.
Right, he can switch out. No, I kind of like that. That'll be interesting. And, you know, to put a bow on sort of this trade talk, it'll be very interesting to see what Memphis does at the deadline. Because, as you mentioned, their bench, those are not guys that you can trust in the spring, right? They're just not ready yet. As much as I like Santi Aldama, and they're not ready yet. Zaire Williams did play some postseason last year, but
it's naive to think he's going to be a difference maker in the playoffs. Right. He'll probably hurt the team. Which is why I put him in my article. I think he's. I love him. Right. I had him number 8 in my mock, and he went number 8. I think I don't get those right typically, but I like him very much. I just don't think he'll help them this year. And if they want to win this year, I'm not saying they should trade him. I just thought maybe they would if they could help their team this year, maybe next year too.
And I think that's the key: is that the Memphis front office, and that's probably the decision they're wrestling with right now.
Yeah.
Is can we win this year or next year? And if we can, that means Zaire, Santi Aldama, Roddy, all these young guys and those picks, we got to think about, okay, maybe we move on from them to get someone we know can help us right now win a title. You know, we'll see. It'll be interesting. One thing you put in the doc, David, in our rundown, you talked about trading players on failing teams before firing coaches. And when you said that, I thought about Toronto immediately.
I was thinking too, buddy.
Okay. I was like, are they going to fall?
First of all, we've already talked about this. Utah last year. Mm-hmm. I thought Utah should have fired Quinn. And Quinn's going to get a job whenever he wants one. And deservedly so. He built an amazing franchise in Utah. But for whatever reason, it didn't work out to the level you want. So don't sell all the players and fire the coach who's very good. Quinn is a very good coach, in my opinion. He built a great defensive system, and then he built the best offense in the league. Come on. Like, how is this guy not considered a good coach? He is. He was not a good postseason coach. But if you're a bad team, who cares?
Right.
It's a privilege to think, oh, he's not good enough to postseason, right?
You got to get to the postseason first.
Exactly. You got to get it just below above 500. So, yeah, Toronto is OG, and he's not going to trade. They're not going to trade Siakam and Barnes, I don't think. Fred VanVleet. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you know, that team finished the season very good last year. Gary Trent Jr. doesn't get really sick. Scottie Barnes doesn't get hurt. I think they beat the Sixers. They lost in six, but I really thought they would have beat them. And maybe I'm wrong. Obviously, they did lose to him. There's a disconnect there. And I think Nick is like Quinn. He'll get hired. As soon as he wants a job, he'll get one. But I would much rather – I just think there's not a lot of great coaches. There's enough. And you have the whole world to find them. And it's easier to do that than get the player. We have rules preventing you from getting players every year. We have no such thing for coaches. As soon as their contract's up, they're available. So I just, yeah, I hesitate to break apart good rosters before changing coaches first.
No, that makes perfect sense. And that's a situation that bears watching. Let's pay attention to Toronto. Pay attention to Atlanta. They're starting to play a little bit better lately. Yeah, just watch what's going on in those places coming up. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back and talk more NBA. All right, David. We went through trade deadline, you know, don't believe all what you hear. We sort of wrapped up on talking about the Raptors when you said, you know, moving on from guys before you change coaches. One guy I highly doubt the Raptors are going to move on from is Scottie Barnes. Aside from Max Thorpe, Scottie Barnes is probably David Thorpe's favorite player in the NBA. Or in basketball player, sorry, Max not in the NBA, but favorite basketball player is Scottie Barnes. Scotty Sirtsohi, our friend, wrote a great piece for The Ringer about Scottie Barnes and sort of, you know, his second year in the league, his development and his ascent, right? I think for many people, not David, because he's got a big basketball brain, he's pretty smart, we're kind of shocked that Scotty was drafted where he was. David said, oh, no, he might be the best player in this draft. Great move by the Toronto Raptors. Sure enough, who won Rookie of the Year last year? Scottie Barnes. And he was lauded as a rookie by LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and I said this on this show before, and I'll say it again. And it's not that LeBron and KD are not complimentary players. They are. But it is very rare for them to go out of their way to call out a rookie. That's just not something that guys like that
do. They don't
do
it very much, yeah.
Right. But they specifically did it for this dude.
Yeah.
Which means he's showed them something, right?
Kyle Lowry did it, too.
Yep.
Kyle Lowry did it, too.
He has earned. They're like, oh, no. This guy's coming. His basketball. Yeah. And they all said, first thing they said, basketball IQ is so high. This guy understands the game, which is rare for rookies, right?
Yeah.
David always says, pros play the game, you know, and young players, pros read the game, excuse me. Yeah. Young players just play, right? Scotty knows how to read the game very well for a young guy. Okay, so second year comes in the league. Maybe, as we always say, development's not linear. It doesn't do this next tick up. Rough way to start the year. And in the piece here, it talks about some of the challenges he's having with, well, I worked on my shooting this summer, so I want to shoot more, okay, but the shots aren't going in. And it's this sort of hesitation between when should I be aggressive and assertive versus when should I get my teammates involved. And you know, David, as a player development coach, that is something that's difficult for players sometimes, right? Particularly if being that I'm going to score the ball is not part of their automatic nature. If they're normally a let me get my teammates and bring everybody else along kind of guy. One player you mentioned that a lot about who you worked with when he was young is Jrue Holiday, right? It took him a long time to learn. No, I got to take over instead of just getting everybody involved. And that's one of the things.
And he's still not great at it. He struggles to do it because he's such a selfless kind of person.
Yeah. Right. And so for Scotty, that's one of the things he's working on, right? Is like, when do I be the guy versus I get so much joy out of bringing everybody along?
Yeah, I have so many things to say about Scotty. I may have told this story once before. His player development coach out by P3 out in Santa Barbara, I think it was. Mm-hmm. A guy that I mentor named Ross McMaines, who's one of the bright young coaches for the NBA. He's with the Maine Celtics now. He told me a story where he made all of his pre-draft guys. He was doing the work for Bill Duffy, Scotty's mm-hmm. agent. And he made every, I think he had five or six guys in the gym. And he made them all sit down. He said, take 10 minutes or so. And I probably told the story a year ago. He said, come up with how are you going to score 20 points in an NBA game? And then come to me and we'll talk about the ways you do it. And so he said, everyone got done, 5-6 minutes, 10 minutes go by, 15, 20 minutes go by. Scotty's just sitting there. So finally, Scotty gets up and Ross like, great, here we go. And Scotty said, coach, can I also get 10 assists? Can I just get 10 assists? And he's like, no, 20 points or 25, whatever the number was. Right, like, all right, go sits back down like 30 minutes. He finally comes over and he came up with it. He just couldn't wrap his arms around. He didn't wrap his brain around the idea that I got to go score because that's just how he's played. So that, I always think about that. The article that she did, which of course is great. She's great. Talks about his love, his joy. He brings joy wherever he goes. That's what my son had told me. That's when I first fell in love with him. I couldn't go to any games. It was the COVID year of 2020. It's just my son said, when he doesn't practice, we don't practice hard. We just, the energy is not there. I think there's a failure here, both on Scotty's part and the team's part. Clearly, he did something right this summer. He says he was shooting better. He was shooting better to start the year. Like most situations, I don't think these teams do very good player development, in my opinion. I know a little something about this business. And so you'll see players start out great and they just kind of fall down because they're not getting the same kind of teaching and reps that they should be getting, in my opinion. I don't think teams are very good at this. Scotty is playing better. I think he trained but didn't really work the way he needed to work. There's a difference. And played a lot of pickup in the summer. That doesn't really do much for you, in my opinion, as I've said. And so, but now he's got all the reps of playing all these games. So he didn't play well last night. Pascal didn't play well last night. And they lost to Utah in a good game. Fred is coming around a little bit. I think maybe he just want to get traded. So he's starting to play a little better. But he definitely, I know that a lot of really smart people I respect don't see Scotty as I think Hollinger and Nate Duncan did a tier system of the best 25 under 25. And I've listed about 10 names now, and his name's not on there, and I think that's fucking ridiculous. And the way they did the tiers, and these are smart guys. I like them very much. I subscribe, and I pay for their podcast. It tells you something that they do once a week together. Their thing was, you have to be an MVP-level player to be in, like, our top whatever. I think he's got a lot of Giannis in him. I think he's got a lot of Magic and Pippen in him. That's an MVP-looking guy. He's got to be able to shoot the three better than Giannis because he isn't Giannis. He's not 7 feet tall and that athletic. He's 6'7" and that athletic. He's capable of averaging a triple-double in a season. Well, we know one of those guys has won an MVP before on the sixth best team in Westbrook. So, and he's a chance to be an all-NBA defender, which he's not. Sure. The other problem is the way the Raptors are constructed.
Yes.
It's five around zero, and everyone, it's a very democratic offense. And it's causing a problem now. Siakam was killing it, but now he was like the king, but now he's become more just another dude, and different guys score well every night, which is what Nick wants. I get that. But that's caused some problems for Scotty too, is he wants to be more. The article talks about this. He didn't want to go to Montverde. Montverde knocked him out of the play. Yeah. He wanted to beat them. Mm-hmm. Well, he ended up in Montverde. That was probably the smart play for him. It's a great program.
Kevin Boyle.
Yeah, it definitely, they developed their players very well. Moses Moody went there. Andrew Nembhard went there. Mm-hmm. Kate Cunningham. Like, hey.
RJ Barrett.
Mm-hmm. Of course, RJ, right? They've done a lot. So he's 21. I'll just say this. My kids are 21. They're fucking stupid. Now, they've made president's lists. And
Max and Rachel, hope you're not listening.
Yeah, they know I say this to them all the time. I was way dumber. I always say, you're smarter than me. You're so fucking stupid. I know what they've done. I will not reveal what I know, but they're fucking dumb. They're 21 years old. We all are, really. Most of us, anyway. Scotty is a brilliant basketball player for 21. Just wait till he's 24, 25. I really feel strongly about that. Don't mess it up. His future is very bright. Believe in it. Breathe spirit into him. Toronto is not going to trade him, I don't think. I'd be absolutely shocked if he is. But I also think he's got to get better, and he's got to learn to find joy in this grind. As a rookie, there's so much spotlight on you.
Yeah,
now he's just another dude.
Yeah,
right. Until you get to that next level where you really are a star again, you're just another dude, and it's got to take some getting used to.
And that jump, I think we said, right, that's the hardest one to make from just, okay, so. Rookie, to get to that. Yeah. Okay, now you're at that all-star level in the NBA. That's a hard jump.
And then the hardest one is to go all-star to all-NBA.
All-NBA,
so,
yes.
Yeah, you're splitting hairs here. These are really, really hard things to do. For him, making the league wasn't so hard. He's that talented. But that's a long road left, right? It's like if you want to climb, what's the biggest mountain in the world? Everest,
Everest, yeah.
Right. Just getting there is a journey, but that's not the hardest journey.
Right.
So he's already done the journey. There's a whole another one left. Climbing Mount Everest for him. It's hard. It's going to take some time.
It is. You know, you mentioned Scotty, and you know, he's 20. Was he 21?
My son's 21, so I think he's the same age.
So he's young. And I was thinking about a player, and we going back to sort of trades, and yeah, you know, RJ Barrett, and we talked about him a little bit. On he's only 22, coach, and he went to Montverde. Mm-hmm. So he played under Kevin Boyle,
number one player in his class over Zion.
Yes. What do you see when you watch him now? Because I'm like, he's only 22, guys. I don't think it's time to give up yet, but something's not happening. But to your point, development clearly ain't happening on the Knicks.
He was bad, and then he was really good. And I've not paid attention recently. Is he struggling again?
Yeah, and he didn't play when that Lakers game. He didn't play the last, I don't know, basically almost all the fourth quarter down the stretch. Just
they didn't put him in?
I just don't know what's
happening. That's a Tom defensively, Thibodeau problem.
Well, I think that's such, yeah. And defensively, he's not as, you know, crisp as he was last season, fighting over screens and like really being aggressive.
Here's what I think his problem is.
Your spirit's sapped a little bit somewhere.
Here's what I think his problem is. He's a power forward.
He's not
a guard. He's not quick enough to be a guard, in my opinion. He's agile, definitely agile. He's skilled. He's comfortable playing on the perimeter, but he's not guard quickness for this league. He should be a four man. That's how I think. Mm-hmm. That's what I think about him. You can let him do whatever you want on offense, but he should be guarding fours on defense. He's powerful, powerfully built guy. He should be a small ball four and play next to a rim protecting five. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Like he'd be a great four. I'm only trying to help your team. And let Jaren be the five.
Oh.
Yeah, let Jaren be the five. And that he'd be very good as a four next to someone like that. Anyone that can really rip it. Same as Minnesota with Rudy. Let him play with one of those fives. I'd make him the four. You can play your five out, whatever you want with him. He's a skilled guy, and he's so young. He graduated high school like at 17 or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think he plays hard, and I like when he uses his body as a battering ram, mm-hmm. which is why I think he's a power forward.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see what happens there going forward in New York. All right, on the NBA today, yesterday, they were talking about Luka Doncic, and Jamal Crawford spoke about the stuff that we're seeing. Not NBA Today, excuse me, wrong show. On TNT's post-game show. I want to be clear, get the right network, the right pops. So on TNT's post-game show, Jamal Crawford said, the stuff you see with Luka that Luka's doing right now, you go back and look at Harden's doing all the same things. Why do we not give James his love when he was doing all the same numbers in Houston? And I want to, you know, first of all, James got an MVP, so he certainly got love, right? And he finished
got more than
top
MVP.
Two. He finished top two, I think, three straight years.
I thought he deserved three in a row. He got one.
As did I.
And he also made it All-NBA every year.
Correct.
And he's been making max money for a long time.
Correct.
So let's acknowledge all of that, Jamal, okay?
Correct. Yeah. So from that perspective, he was for sure getting his due.
Yeah.
What Crawford is referring to is the way in which Luka is talked about in certain circles among NBA media versus the way Harden was talked about. They both play heliocentric ball, right? That's how they play. That being that they are literally the sun that the other player planets revolve around. Right. They have the ball in their hands all the time. They're initiating the offense. They're getting double. They're kicking out for wide open threes, driving to the rim, all that, right? The usage rate for both of them in their peaks was that high.
And that's what we're talking about here. Harden and Houston, not in
Brooklyn or in Philly.
We're comparing apples to apples here. Right?
Exactly. And we said those seasons, that was some of the best offensive basketball we'd ever seen in the history of the NBA in the regular season. He was outstanding. There was a price to pay for that. And you and I said, when we did one of our shows, Henry asked, what do you guys think about Luka winning a title? We both said, it's giving us James Harden vibes, right? That idea that it's great, you're going to win a ton of regular season games, but at what cost? Come April, how much gas you have left in the tank to do that again for four rounds against no bad teams now? Now you got to beat everybody who's good. Well, we saw that doesn't quite work, right? You don't have enough. And there is a racial component here, and that's the part that Crawford isn't saying out loud. This idea that Harden and Luka are doing the same things. Why does it seem among certain media members that we love Luka's style of play, yet those same media members were like, all James Harden does is, you know, bait fouls, get to the free throw line. Luka does the same thing. Matter of fact, Luka also whines for calls every time.
More than James.
Way more than James. Like, it's the same thing. They're both doing the same exact thing, but one, for whatever reason, looks different than the other, right? And so it's viewed differently. So I think that's what Jamal Crawford was getting at.
Okay, so I'm going to get a little serious for a moment. When I read that, I don't remember if I put in the doc or you did, but I saw it, I thought of this. It reminded me of what Doc Rivers said in the bubble after George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Why do they hate us?
Mm.
Yeah. Because what happens with the treatment we've given our black citizens in this country for since inception, basically, there's an oversensitivity, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The problem is much of it is well-deserved. Mm-hmm. You needed to be sensitive because we've been so horrific as a cultural society. I can't speak for the idiots who like Luka's game and didn't like Harden's. There probably is a racial component, or they're just stupid, or they're Mavericks fans. They are very similar. And we've been talking about this for 2 years on our show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we know breaking speeds. It was always Harden tops, then Luka. And I think it's now Luka.
A wide
one.
Gap, and then everybody else.
Right. I don't think Harden's number two. Right. Exactly. No. Luka's the best. And he's bigger than Harden. And he's incredible. I don't think he's a better passer. The few times I've heard him, people say, better pass than Harden, I've always objected.
No.
I don't think they're saying it for racial issues. They just don't know basketball.
Right.
James was an elite unbelievable passer.
Still is an elite passer.
Exactly, of course. Right. Led the league in assists and the whole thing. He's amazing. So Luka's got better angles to throw from. He's a bigger guy. And he plays a little bit slower even, which probably helps him read a little more, but I would not rank his passing above Harden. I think Jamal is – I think there's just a perception that's well earned that because my guy is not white, he's mm-hmm. being treated differently than the dude that is white. Mm-hmm. And historically speaking, he's definitely right. Mm-hmm. I don't feel in this case, I'm the worst guy to even opine on what media people are saying, because I don't listen to most of them. The ones I do listen to are really smart, and none of them have ever said anything like Luka better than Harden, whatever. Like I don't think Luka is better than Harden. I think he has the chance to be better, but he's not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly hasn't accomplished as much in his career. The best thing James Harden did wasn't just help OKC get to the finals, which Luka has not done that yet. He's younger, I know. I think they were right there with Golden State, a juggernaut team. And without Chris Paul's
hamstring,
I think they would have. Yeah. I don't care how he played. He took them there. He was by far their best player.
Correct.
And they gave Golden State the best run anyone could. No one else could come close to him. So I go back to what Doc said. I wish societally, as well as in the covering the league, we did a better job of seeing things clearly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think many people do that well yet. We do. I think we try to do anyway.
We aspire to do it right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I think you're dead on. It's just there is, right? And your natural inclination is going to be, well, what's the reason, right? And because history has shown us, you've always given us the reason, right? And the reason's always, well, because you're black, right?
Was that young man pulled over in Memphis?
Right.
They're now saying they have no idea why. I believe that came out yesterday.
Did it? Okay.
They're not even sure. I think the words were basically, we suspect he should not have even been pulled over. Like, this was a murder.
For sure.
They might even go up to first degree. A woman said this. I don't remember what woman it was. He was pulled over because he was black. Like, we know this is a problem in this country, right?
For sure.
So Jamal is part of the other thing about, and this is my issue with former players. And I became a huge fan of Jamal Crawford. I thought he was always going to be a six-man level player because he, the same as that field by Zach LaVine. Just let that dude score. He'll light you up. And he won't really ever shoot you out of many games. He's so good. He really was incredible. I don't think a lot of former players are reading and listening to the right media people.
Yeah.
They're following the wrong ones, the loudest ones on TV. Mm-hmm. No.
Right.
John Hollinger would never, Zach Lowe would never suggest these things that Jamal, and we would never do. We're the smartest ones in the room with stuff like that. So Jamal, listen to us. Listen to Zach and listen to John and you'll be just fine. The other ones, well, not all. I love Sam Amick. There's plenty of good ones. There are a lot of friends, but there's a lot of ninnies out there too.
Don't spend too much time on NBA Twitter conversations. You'll drive yourself nuts on that.
Right.
All right, David. It is our you had a question in the doc. Why did Dallas copy the Houston strategy of letting one guy be the, man?
What are you doing, guys? Like they're really hard to upgrade it. I don't know. I have to go back and look at the construct of how this all happened, but they've really built Houston over again. And it does make sense, especially as the league has changed more and more. It makes no sense.
I also like, what was their plan when they decided to let Jalen Brunson go? It doesn't seem they had one.
Right? Well, I think they felt like Spencer would take that spot.
Okay.
That's what
Spencer's fine, but you know.
Have three of them.
Yeah.
Three studs instead of two as guards. And even go back to KP.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's fucking playing great. They'd love to have a center like that now. So that tells me there's a systemic problem. When players go somewhere else and do much better and playing time isn't the factor, because that's a separate thing. If I can't play because you're loaded and I go somewhere else and show you how good I am, well that's just because we're loaded. That's not the case in Dallas. Yeah. Dwight Powell is taking those minutes. And Christian Wood could be a four next to Kristaps, you know?
Yeah, no, it's Bears watching what Dallas does at the deadline because we all agree that if it's the Lucas show, they just won't have enough come April.
I would not bet on them, no.
All right. Top five. Oh man. All right, here we go. I'm gonna say this and start with the fifth place team was the hardest one for me, David, because I'm like, I put the Kings there because of these teams, they played the best over their last 10. But it's the Kings, it's the Cavs, it's Brooklyn, it's Memphis. Those four teams to me are who I struggle with to put at five. So I gave it to the Kings, so they've been better over their last 10.
I can't argue with you there. I don't love my list, but I had Memphis squeezing in at five. I know they're struggling, though. I know they're struggling.
And they're adjusting. That's still pretty good despite their struggles.
Yeah. So, well, it helps because they did so well early on. They're losing close games. I think they have depth issues, which I've written about and talked about. But I have my number five, and you got your five at Sacramento.
At Sacramento. Yeah, number four, I got Milwaukee.
I have Denver.
Okay. Number three, I have Denver.
I have Milwaukee.
There we go. Our top two are going to be the same. 76ers at two?
I think we have to have Sixers and Celtics. Yeah.
And Celtics at one.
They're deserving of that. Last thing real quick. I heard some smart guys talking about, I think it was, I don't remember who was talking about. Oh, Zach Lowe and someone was talking about, maybe Tim McMahon, who I like very much. Embiid outplayed Jokic. Does that give him an edge in the MVP? I want to hear your thoughts on that. Because I like what they said a lot.
I think how you perform against the other top candidate head-to-head should matter, right? Yeah,
that's what Zach and Tim said, too.
I think it should matter. And there is a... Now, here's the question I have for you. Their styles are just so different, right? And I was saying this to someone the other day. Embiid is on the top of my list of players who... I don't know if you saw this. Luka got into a back-and-forth with the Pistons assistant coaches when he dropped 53 on him. He said, like, who are you to one of them? Like, and Luka said after the game, they were chirping at me. So I'm going to chirp back. I'm not afraid, whatever. And I was like, who are guys who, like, I don't want to chirp at and get them going? And Embiid was one for me because there's a way in which he plays, David, that's so physical that once he starts going, he might kill me. He might literally kill me and put me into the basket. And that's what he wants to do every time. And that's just the vibe I get from him when he played. And in that game specifically, he wanted to be like, I respect Jokic and he's very good. But I think I'm better than him. I'm going to show you how much better I am than him. And I was like, oh, man, he was giving him the business.
Yeah, if they're metrically pretty much identical, then I look at head-to-head. We don't typically see that. Like, Jokic has the best metrics. But there's 30-plus games left. Let's see what happens. I think Embiid's the clear number two right now, again.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, and it might be that situation like it was for Harden those years, right? You get number two, number you finally, maybe you get one somewhere. Yeah. You sneak in.
Yeah, there's
in
no
and
reason to
one.
Think he won't get one eventually. Yeah.
But he, you
but
know.
If they win the East and Denver doesn't win the West.
Yeah.
And the metrics aren't quite so close. I still think Embiid can get it.
Yeah.
I don't care. I have no dog in the fight.
I mean, we don't, and I know, but I know for these guys, like MVP means so much to them.
Yeah. I'm glad they're ambitious. I have no problem with it.
It's so huge. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. We got, we're almost at 50 games. Jesus. season's winding down. All-Star will be here in a few weeks. They announced the reserves tonight. We did our reserves last week, so let's see how many we got right. I think we're pretty good. I think we'll get everyone. Everyone that we mentioned will probably be in. It depends on what happens with if Durant plays or not, and if he doesn't, who the injury replacement is.
Right.
But I think everyone we mentioned will probably get in.
Okay.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend, and we will see you next week. Take care.